Other is assured, yes, you will come back to me. But the other side is easy. And this Sulabha is actually an answer to Arjuna, Dushkaram. Arjuna said that actually controlling the mind by yoga is difficult. It's almost impossible. Janchalami Mana Krishna Pramadit Tastyaham Nigram Manya Vayo Riva Sudushkaram. So Sudushkaram and Sulabha is the exact opposite. So here Krishna actually answered Arjuna's question. There Krishna only does Arjuna that, yeah, it's difficult, but if you follow the right process, then you will achieve it. And here, what is the right process? He answers that. Right process, always remember me. And Krishna is saying two things over here. Always remember me and always be engaged in devotional service. Both things he said. And Chaitanya Bhaktam, Yomasma Vinishas, Nishtasaha, and Nishta Yuktasya Yogina. So always remember me and always be engaged in my service. So both are there. So internal remembrance and external activity, external service. So both he is talking about. And like I often Prabhupada uses the word devotional service in Krishna consciousness. Which is those phrases together. But in devotional service still, devotion is the adjective and service is the noun. So what does that mean? A service is what is primary at our level. It's like when you say, it's a beautiful flower. So yes, the more important is the flower, it's also beautiful. Primary attribute is the flower. He's wearing a yellow dress. Wearing a dress, the color of the dress is yellow. So the sentence can go on without a adjective, it cannot go on without a noun. He's wearing a yellow. It doesn't make sense. He's wearing a yellow dress. He's wearing a dress. It can go on. So, generally the adjective is something which adds to the noun. That doesn't mean devotion is unimportant. But especially in the initial stages, service is what is important. By service, gradually you develop devotion. And if we just try to artificially develop devotion and not do service, then most of it will stay mental. And that's why Prabhupada, what is the classic statement in NOI? Devotional service is not an imaginative ecstasy or sentimental speculation. Its substance is practical activity. Its substance is practical activity. So, Guru Das Purana says, the offerings. They are very beautiful, very insightful offering. He said, Prabhupada sent him to Vrindavan to build a temple. And then he had heard of Prabhupada about how Vrindavan is the abode of Krishna. And he had written Krishna about how Vrindavan is the abode of Vrindavan. Radhe, Radhe, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And he went there and he was just wanting to wander around. Prabhupada told him he was in this temple. And he was trying to work on it. Still, he was in a very romantic sort of consciousness. And finally, Prabhupada said, you know that I am coming to Vrindavan. This is the fulfillment of all my dreams. You know, my Sunday Master is supposed to take me back to Vrindavan, Bolo Vrindavan, future world. Oh, the Sujal Master sent me to Vrindavan before and he's coming here also. I'll be with my Sujal Master in the abode of Krishna. So he was very excited about it. And he was very excited and he took him with, he went to Delhi to receive Prabhupada. Prabhupada came by airplane and when Prabhupada came, he ran to that and Prabhupada was very green. Prabhupada was thinking about him, okay, it's all the past and the Lord Krishna, she's not disturbed. So, and then sat down, Prabhupada was having beads in his hand, Prabhupada was very great. And he was thinking, what is Prabhupada thinking about? Prabhupada looking at the window, looking at him, not saying anything, very great. And they went halfway, and finally, they came almost on the outskirts of India. The first word that Prabhupada said, cement! Cement! He says, why is there so much difficulty in getting cement? When are you trying to make the cement? He said, why are you getting so delayed in getting the cement? Cement. So then he realized, you know, all my ideas of Vrindavan Bhakti were all, the bubble was burst by the Prabhupada. So his substance is practical service. So, Prabhupada was very careful in not letting thirdly eye tendencies develop within our movement. Actually, we hear that Prabhupada was in Scottish Church College. At the time, Scottish Church College, at that time, his professor sometimes would criticize Hinduism. For example, he said, where is the witness in the heart? And Prabhupada knew the answer, or rather, who is the witness to know what you have done for one life and the next life? So Prabhupada is the answer, but because the meditator did not answer. So the professor who taught Prabhupada, he was also a very reputed Christian missionary, Protestant missionary. And he was strongly critical of Vaishnavism. And one of his criticisms of Vaishnavism was this Sahaja. These people, they do all sorts of immoral activities and they say that just by chanting the name of Vishnu you become free from all sinful activities. It is absurd. Anything is just religious, what is this? This religious justification of immorality. So, Prabhupada is aware of the pitfalls of misusing the glories of the holy name. It was very strong that devotees should not prematurely develop sahajiya tendencies. And he will then repeatedly caution devotees. Right? Our spiritual advancement will come by our practical service to Krishna. So, now Prabhupada, here it is, that Prabhupada directly introduces for the first time after the introduction. The introduction is talking about five rasas. The first time he introduces the five rasas in the purport over here. And he said that actually this is how a devotee thinks of Krishna. Now Prabhupada is taking the far ahead of what actually the verse is saying. The verse is just introducing Kevala Bhakti. So after 7.1, the first verse which is going to talk about Kevala Bhakti, 8.14. In this chapter, Ananya Chaitaha Satam, after Yoga Mishra Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti started. The Prabhupada is telling us further details of Kevala Bhakti based on what we know from the Gauri Acharyas. And again Prabhupada gives the full Mahamantra. This is the fifth time now. Yeah. Now comes the well-known verse. We will read quote on one fourth of this verse very often. Sukhale Shashatam. So actually when Krishna quotes this verse, the emphasis is not on this verse, the emphasis is on getting out of this place. This is Dukkhalam Shashatam. So the previous verse Krishna is saying, and those who always remember me, therefore then I am easily obtained. So Narayana says, okay, if you are obtained, what happens after you are obtained? Krishna says, if you obtain me, then you come back. Maam upetya punar janma dukkhalam shashvatam naapnuvanti mahatmanah tamsiddhim paramamratah. Paramamratah. So now here Krishna has explicitly equated. And those who attain me, they attain the paramamratah. So I tell you, if there is some ambiguity, Krishna makes it clear. So here you see sometimes Krishna uses the third person to refer to himself. Sayati, what is that? Paramapurush, what is that word? No, before that. Satam Paramapurusham Upayiti Divyam. That is the 10th verse. Satam Paramapurusham Upayiti Divyam. But who is that Paramapurusham? So that is Krishna himself. So Krishna sometimes uses third person to address himself and that might lead to some confusion sometimes. But if you read the whole section, then there is no confusion. Just here only, a 10th verse and 14th verse is only 4 verses only. He has referred to himself in the third person, but now he is referring that supreme person as he himself. So it makes things very clear. Now after this, Krishna describes that he is comparing this achievement with other achievements in this world. In order to glorify distinctly this achievement, he compares the achievement of returning back to him with other achievement in this world. Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravatino Arjuna Mamupetyatu Kaunteya Punarjanma Navidyate. Simply filled with lies. What is the lie? You say, they say that those whom, and the Vedic scriptures say, that by drinking amrita, you will become amar, that is simply a lie. There is no amrita in the material world. Everybody has to die. So, suffering with lies. They say that the promises of eternal immortality are all false. So actually, they are not exactly false in the sense that in swarga nobody dies. But when you have to die, you are pushed out of swarga and then you die. It's like that. So, that's how the immortality of swarga is preserved and the mortality of the living beings is also preserved. So, the idea is that in general, whenever the process is to be glorified, to encourage people to follow that process, the glorification of the process is done. But when that glorification of the process is taken out of context, then it becomes disproportionately magnified. So, the amaratva of the devalokas is relative, not absolute. That means as compared to life on earth, the lifespan of the heavenly planets is so long, it appears as if it is immortal. But from the absolute point of view, it is not at all immortal, it is temporal. So it is not false, but it is a statement which is meant to inspire people to follow that process. I mean, that's what we see contextually. The relative glorification as compared to life in this world, so long, versus it is temporary. And then, this itself is a surprising statement. Oh, that means even up to Brahma Loka also is not eternal. So Arjuna says, but I have heard that Brahma Loka is eternal. No, it's not. So this theme is expanded by Krishna in the next section, from 17 to 22. Do the residents of the higher planets feel that they are living for so long? When Albert Einstein was asked, you know, can you explain relativity? So, what did he say? Little mundane example, he says, that when you are hearing a boring lecture, 1 hour appears to be like 1 year. And then there is a beautiful girl, 1 hour appears to be like 1 minute. So this is relativity for as much as you can understand. So, the point is that in Swarga Loka, the enjoyment is so much that time just creeps away. And one doesn't feel that it's a long time. Because the enjoyment is there, enjoyment intoxicates the person. When it intoxicates the soul, it doesn't feel so much time is there. In Satya Loka, it is higher. Satya Loka, they feel, but they are also focused. In Vedanta Bhagavatam, it is said that in Satya Loka, austerity is the sense gratification. Austerity is the sense gratification. I wonder how can austerity be sense gratification? Those two seem to be opposite conceptions. But the point is that sense gratification means that which gives us material pleasure. Sense gratification means that activity which gives us material pleasure. And based on the modes that are influencing us, certain activities will give us material pleasure. If somebody is in passion and he sees somebody else sleeping for 14 hours, 15 hours, even a person passionately, you are eating, but a person is eating, you can have joy. That's what life is like for. Relax. See? So for him, sleep is sense gratification. For a person in passion, when we see in goodness, you know, we are thinking how hard people work in their company, 14 hours, 16 hours, sometimes they stay in their company only. How much they are torturing. They don't feel torture. They feel this enjoyment. Why? Because the mode of passion, the thrill of achievement, the thrill of success, it intoxicates them. So when somebody is in the mode of goodness, highly in the mode of goodness, actually doing austerity gives pleasure. Because austerity gives pleasure. So austerity is a satisfaction for them over this. So in general, because in the higher manifestation the enjoyment is there, whether it is sensual or it is subtler. So people don't feel the time is so long. Yes. Yeah, yes, man. We have the story of Loma Shushi also, na? Loma Shushi. He also, he had a benediction that after every day of Brahma, one hair will fall. And then we did not even build a hut. The life is so short.
Yes, please.
There are two things here. Now, when Prabhupada tells us that these time scales are different at different times, in that Krishna scripture. So we know that's a direct statement. Now, apart from that, we also have the direct statement of scripture. That, you know, say, Lord Ram was exiled for 12 years and he ruled for this many years. So now, I'll tell the general principle first, then I'll give the specific answer. So, generally, anuman or speculation is discouraged. But Vandiyam Vidya Bhushan says that ahir is the word he uses. A-I-H-Y. Ahir is the reasoning to reconcile apparent contradictory statements. And he says that is essential for a sadhaka to get a complete understanding of scripture. So, that is Shastra Moolak Anuman. We can call it vicharas. That is sufficient. Generally speaking, when the scriptures talk about time spans, if they give specific figures, then it means specific figures. So the Ramayana says that, now I have heard some devotees say that it is percentage wise. That, you know, that 12 years of his life, you know, like maybe 1200 years or 1500 years. But the day if you read Ramayana, it doesn't figure out like that. And another point is that specifically, Mantara tells Kalkai why she wants 12 years. When the plan is there, he says that if Ram is there in the kingdom only, then Bharat will never accept, he will be embarrassed to become the king. Because Bharat, she knows his true virtues. She has been able to influence Kaikeyi, but she will not be able to influence Bharat. And after that, the second thing is that if Ram goes out, then in 12 years, Bharat can win over the Praja by giving gifts and giving favors. And then by the time, even if he comes back, he is so popular looking that the people have forgotten Ram. That's her plan. So 12 years is a figure which she chooses for that. Similarly here, they also choose 14 years. Ramayana is 14 years, not 12 years. 12 years is here, Vanvas of 12 plus 1 is Pandava. So, that also is for similar reason. Duryodhana's plan is that he will win over the demons. So in general, these figures should be taken literally. Well, now when we say if somebody is living for 1000 years, does that mean that for 250 years he has to be brahmachari?
No. Not exactly.
The idea is
what? Mother had to wait for so long.
No, the idea is that they have to understand the principle of this. The principle of the longer lifespan is that one has longer time for enjoyment in this world. Or you can have longer time for service in this world. Like in the heavenly planet, generally this Vyadhi and Jara is not so much there. It's only Janma and Mrityu. Vyadhi and Jara can come occasionally because of some Rishi's curse or something like that. But generally not. So like that, in the Vedic culture also, in the previous yugas, from what I have read, basically the other lifespan is similar. That means in know, for say a day of 500 goes to Gurukul and then he comes back. Now Prabhupada, this is a standard, but not necessarily that everybody has to follow that standard. 525. You see, Pandavas never went out of their kingdom to go to Guru. They were saying, oh, because they were, you know, they already stayed out for so long, because they had gone with Pandu out, when Pandu was living at the foot of the Himalayas, and they came back. Then Bhishma had Drona stay near the palace only, and he trained them like that. Lord Ram also never went out to Gurukul first. He went out because the Vishwamitra requested that, I want to kill that. At that time he also was given some education. So, the Gurukul was a standard, but it is not necessary. We have to go and stay in the Guru Ashram also. So the idea is that there are exceptions for these things. And if it says Bhagavan left at age of 24, that means that, you know, he was young and he got married and he left at age of 24. It was mentioned also he left his wife. Dara is also mentioned over there. So then it's not that if he is going to live for 10,000 years, after 2,500 years he gets married. So basically the idea is that the enjoyable span of life is available much, much more. The youth goes quickly and the old age also minimal, because you are an early age. But the enjoyable part of life, or which you can also use for dharma, and available is much more. That's my understanding. Yeah. Let's come to this section. Now, how is the section driving? What is the link to the previous section? Krishna said that even in the heavens you have to come back. What is the link? But I heard that the Brahma Loka is eternal. So Krishna said, no. He said, we are doing the statistics. This is why I will explain to you how Eva and Brahma Loka, Brahma Loka is not eternal. Brahma's life is not eternal. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharyas Brahmano Viru Ratri Yuga Sahasrantam Eho Ratra Vidojanaha. Okay. So, all of us know this lifespan very well, so I won't go into much details about this. Go ahead. Vittadyaktaha sarvaha prabhavantyahara agame rātya agame praliyante saiva vyakta samyake. So, this manifest and unmanifest refers to what? This refers to the, Srila Swami explained, this refers to not the end of the life of Brahma, this refers to the intermediate period between one day and one night. So, this Divya Yugas, they make one day and one night. So, you know those different types of pralayas which are talked about in the 12th canto? Which are the pralayas? The Nitya Pralaya, Nainmittika Pralaya, Atyantika Pralaya. Just a minute. Yeah. The 12.4 chapter, the four categories of universal destruction. That's what I have to say. Yeah, read it out. During his night. Wait a minute. Final analysis. That means when our identification with our body and that is the authentic pralaya.
Now, this is a pralaya where the Buddha is one and the Wait a minute.
Okay, the first parallel is temporal. Temporal line is matter is continuously getting destroyed and being recreated. So every moment it is happening.
Oh.
We say that Shiva is performing his dandav. That is at the end of the creation, but it's not that he has to sit and employ the rest of the creation. No, he is destroying continuously. Destruction is going on continuously in this universe. So Nitya, Nainattika, Prakrutika and Atyantika, four pillars are there. So Krishna is talking here about the Nainattik pralaya. Yeah. That is Prakritika, not Nainattika. How it is, this whole process is given here. You can read it, but I'll just tell you briefly, 12.4 of the chapter, the Bhagavatam. So, Naimittik Pralaya, as you know, what happens is that 11th planetary system is destroyed out of the 14th. The top 3 planetary systems remain. And that's where the sages fly upwards and they take resort over there. And this is the night of Brahma. And they are, the mind is sleeping and they are praying to the Lord and trying to take themselves in their prayer. During the authentic parlay, even the material existence, everything is withdrawn into the body of Mahavishnu. Hmm? Yeah, Mahavishnu. See, everything practically. Brahmaji has died. Brahmaji has died. So, now, when Brahmaji has died, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, In the way I have read it, that's what the Paramahamsa says, school of human evolution, that actually the universes come out of the body of Mahavishnu. When they come out, they're small, bubble like. And they start expanding. And their rate of expansion is differentiated. But, you know, when and they expand for about half their lifespan, and then Mahavishnu starts inhaling. He starts inhaling, then actually the time when all the universes start withdrawing backwards. But eventually when they come in, all of them come in at the same time. That means, it's not that this universe is destroyed and another is existing. Because the breath of Mahavishnu is only, there's one Mahavishnu and his breath is one. So during his breath, all the three universes are created, and during his withdrawal of the breath, all the universes come inside. That's how. And it's not just into Garbhodaksha Vishnu, everything is withdrawn into Mahavishnu.
Brahma Pandya.
No. Brahma Pandya, everything exists. Brahma is one day, the lower planetary systems are destroyed, the upper planetary systems are there, the structure of the universe is there. Authentic is the soul of material existence. Soul is the illusion of this identity of the body is. So what we'll do is, when we study Bhakti Vaibhav and 12th Canto, we'll discuss. Bhuta gramasya evayam bhutva bhutva prariyate rātri āgame asana kārta prabhavasya harāgame. Helplessly annihilated. So actually, you know, we go around endeavoring in our lives so feverishly, but there are higher powers which intercede everything. When the tsunami came in Japan, Japan is one of the most remarkably progressed countries in recent times, because when the atom bomb was dropped in 1945, it was completely in ruins. Not only was the country physically in ruins, but its morale was in ruins because of that devastating attack. But they worked very hard and they rebuilt their economy in a remarkable way. Very hard-working people. But, you know, we may work hard at our level, but there are just higher forces and higher power, which is sent us completely helpless. And they had prepared for the disaster also. When they made the Fukushima nuclear reactor, they had prepared that a tsunami may come. And they had prepared that the earthquake may come. But, you know, they had not prepared a tsunami and earthquake will come both together. And, you know, even if you try to prepare for calamities, to what extent can you prepare for calamities? So now, after this whole thing, now what they did, and because Japan is an earthquake-prone area, so they make their all their houses of sort of material which is not very harmful, which it falls on the ground. And it's also earthquake resistant. But even the scale of the earthquake was so huge, like, you know, actually 1 degree higher on the Richter scale means that the strength is a billion times more. So according to them, according to researchers, when that earthquake came, Earth shuddered in its orbit. Earth, the whole Earth shuddered in its orbit. That's the magnitude of the force. That happens. So they cannot anticipate. So some of the researchers are thinking, this magnitude of earthquake comes, no matter how much we make strong the material, how much suitable we make the material, there can always be a higher earthquake coming. So then they thought that they thought of a new idea. I mean, you can appreciate determination at the same time feel pity at their ignorance. What are the determination? They said that we will use magnetic pulls and create houses above the earth. So that even if earthquakes come, what will happen is that magnetic pull is not affected, the house will practically float. But then what happened? Next one, tornadoes came in America. That the houses are floating and tornadoes come, the house. So, at a material level, people do work hard, but that there are higher powers. Helplessly, essentially, avashapat. It is helplessly annihilated. The higher forces at work against which we can do practically nothing. So then after, show graphically describing that there is nothing imperishable in this world. Everything is destructible. Now Krishna will contrast that with the indestructibility, the eternality of the spiritual world.
परस्तस्मात् भावो ज्ञो यत्को व्यक्ता सनातनः यः स सर्वेषु भूतेषु नश्यतो न विनश्यति.
The first time he focus on the eternal abode. He mentioned my abode, that supreme abode. But these three verses, the first time there is a focused discussion. And this vyakto and avyaktar. So vyakto means material nature when it is manifested, and avyaktar means when material nature when it is unmanifested. So even when it is unmanifested, it is still material. There is some existence which is beyond both of these. The manifested material nature and unmanifested material nature. And that should be our shelter. So, and he describes that further.
Avyakto akshayukta-stamahu paramamratim samprasya nanivartante saddhama paranam mama.
So very clear. That supreme destination, my supreme abode. Very clear. If it is still not clear in 8.14, now there is no doubt about it. And it's very difficult for Mayavadis to take this sort of statements. Because you know, this is Krishna using the word dham. Dham is a residence. You cannot equate the dham with or Brahma Jyoti. Because Dham means a place where somebody resides. So these verses, now interestingly again, here the word avyakta is slightly different from the word avyakta in the previous verse. In the previous verse, avyakta means matter in an unmanifested stage. In this word, avyakta means spirit which is beyond material perception, which is never manifested to us, to our material vision. So, we cannot see spiritual reality. So, all the Prabhupada uses the word unmanifested only for both of them. But a significant difference. That is, matter which is sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. So, it's vyakta and avyakta. But this avyakta is that which is never manifest to material vision. We have to develop our spiritual vision to see that. And avyakta akshara. It is imperishable, it is infallible. So this verse, this chapter started with what? What is the verse that started? Aksharam Brahma Paramam. That is first verse that Krishna was speaking. Kim tad Brahma kim adhyatmam. So Aksharam Brahma Paramam. That Akshara. What is that? Brahma. As Brahma, the living entity is there, the Supreme Lord is there, and the Supreme Abode is also there. And he equates, at the supreme destination, once you go there, you will never come back. That is the supreme destination. So now, why is this repeated emphasis that once you go there, you will never come back here? Why? Because, you know, in this world, we achieve many things, but when we achieve them, they don't satisfy us. We always want something more, something better. Krishna is saying that once you go there, then we abode that will eternally satisfy us, eternally shelter you. For there with you forever. And once again, Krishna will come back to the main point of this chapter, which is remembrance. So he will say, how will you attain that supreme person, supreme award? Purushasya paraha partha kapya labhyastva nanyaya yasyantasthani bhutani yena sarvam idam tatam. So then Krishna is referring to himself in the third verse, Purushasya Parampartha. The second part of this phrase, verse, Yasyanta Sthani Bhutani Yena Sarvamramtatam. This will come again in the 18th chapter. It is a very significant verse which indicates why this Purusha is Paraha. What is so special about this Purusha? That within him the whole creation is situated. It is apparently contrary to attributes. Yasyanta Sthani Bhutani. Antaha is inside. Within him the whole creation is situated. And Yena Sarvamramtatam. He is situated with the whole creation. So it's both. That means the creation exists within him and he exists within the creation. This is something we are thinking. Now, either the bottle is inside the bottle or the bottle is inside the bottle. How can you have both? Isn't it? Okay, you have a bottle and you put bottle inside. The water is inside the bottle. But if you want to put you have a bigger container which contains water and you put bottle inside the bottle. But how can you have both water inside the bottle and bottle inside the bottle? So the creation is inside the Lord and the Lord is inside the creation. How is that possible? Achintya. It's not as achintya. As Mahavishnu, the creation is inside him. As the Vishnu, the creation is inside him. As Paramatma, Shivaksha Vishnu, he is inside the creation. But this can be understood only when we understand the multi-level manifestations of God. If you just think of God as one person, and then it's very difficult to reconcile this. That's why this Brahman Paramatma Bhavan understanding, Mahavishnu, this is very important for reconciling the apparently contradictory or paradoxical things. So one manifestation of Anoranya Mahatomanya. The Shivaksha Vishnu is smaller than the smallest, but Mahavishnu is greater than the greatest, like that. Yeah, Prabhupada gives an example in the Krishna book and immediately qualifies that example that this is a crude example. It's a relatively correct, yeah. But the difference is that it's not that just the box energy is there, Krishna himself is there also for source. Now, after describing this, till 22 was to get the inspiration for remembrance by understanding the temporary nature of the material world and the eternal nature of the spiritual world. This was from 17 to 22. Now this is similar to the Ishopishad word, Vidyamcha Vidyamcha Yastad Vedo Vyamsa Avidyayamrityu Tirva Vidyaya Amritamashnite. So know the temporality of this material world, that is Vidya, Avidya. And know the eternality of the spiritual world, that is Vidya. Vidyamcha Vidyamcha Yastad Vedo Vyamsa. Then you go ahead and go beyond. So Krishna compares. And after comparing, then he comes back to the question which Arjuna had asked. Focus. Okay, this he has told here, Bhaktya Labhya Svananaya. How can you attain that abode? By bhakti. So now, emphasizes that by bhakti you can attain that abode. He gives the alternative processes by which one can strive to go towards the abode. And he says, shows the complexity and to some extent the futility of attempting those processes. To emphasize again, the glory of Kevala Bhakti, of pure Bhakti. So, now we will come back to, okay, Bhakti can attain that abode. What are the processes to attain that abode? Apart from Bhakti. So, describe those processes. So that, why does Krishna compare to glorify Bhakti by showing its efficacy as compared to the limitations of the other processes.
Yatra kale tvanamrittim, avrittim chaiva yoginaha, prayatayanti tam kalam, vakshami bharatarshava.
The best of the Vartas, I shall now explain to you the different kinds at which, parting away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back.
Yes. Now, here Krishna will talk about the auspicious and inauspicious time, and auspicious and inauspicious ways or phases. So, when we are striving for anything by material means, then we have to harmonize the material principles. And that means that if somebody is doing something, a material endeavor, it's like one of the researchers are finding out that if they build houses according to Vastu, overall the effect is much better if house is not built according to Vastu. Now why is that? Now what is Vastu is a long story, we don't have time for that now.
Here.
But basically, it's a subtle material principle. And if you don't harmonize it, it creates trouble. Same way, dying is also a momentous material occasion. And depending on when and how a person dies, that affects the destination. As astrology was very important. In fact, in Vedic times or in Vedic culture, the mathematics was developed, mathematics and astronomy were developed primarily to aid in astrology. How was that? That astrology means, even in Western culture, astronomy developed as a subset of astrology. Because people knew that when the stars and planets are in certain formations, they are auspicious for us. Then, if you want to do such an important thing, then we have to know when the star moves like that. And we observe and we calculate, okay, the star moves at this speed. And if it moves at this speed, then it will come here at this time. Then this combination will come here at this time. So, like that, they would observe. So, astronomy was developed primarily to aid astrology. And similarly, geometry was developed to in the Vedic culture to aid astrology. You know, this what we call as the Pythagoras theorem is not found in any of the books of Pythagoras. It is not found in any of the books of Pythagoras. A geometrician two generations of a Pythagoras is named Euclid, and it is found for in the Western intellectual history. The Pythagoras theorem is found for the first time in the writing of Euclid. And Euclid attributes it to Pythagoras. Euclid said that, I have been told that Pythagoras spoke about this. But it is not found anywhere in the writing of Pythagoras. Now, there is a very famous historian of mathematics. Historian of mathematics means how mathematics developed, one who does the history of that. So, in the Vedic mathematics, there is a book called Shulba Sutra. So, in the Shulba Sutra, the Pythagoras theorem is given. Some of you might have seen the PPT which I have prepared, Indians Discover Your Glory. So in that the Sanskrit formula for Sanskrit verse giving Pythagoras theorem is also given over there. So, as this, Shulma Sutra is way, way older than the time when either Euclid or Pythagoras lived. But what is Shulma Sutra use this formula? Why does Shulma Sutra use this formula? Because at that time, the sacrificial altars had to be performed. Now when you talk about yajna, you will just make a small hole in the ground and put some fire in it and put some ghee and you call it yajna. It was not like that at that time. The fire altars were huge. You know, in the Vedic time, the kind of effort that we put in decorating the deity altar during festivals, that was the kind of effort that or more effort they would put for the fire altars. Because, as I was telling in earlier class, that Devanam Paramo Vishnu, Avno Agni, that Anta Sarva Devata, the Buddha says. That among the Devatas, the topmost is Vishnu, and the nearest human is Agni. And all the Devatas are in between, other Devatas. So, Agni has to invoke, so that all the other Devatas will follow. So they would have giant fire sacrifices. And for those giant fire sacrifices, the altars had to be made of particular sheets. And now is sometimes, like if you go to Mayapur, there are these sometimes flower patterns in the meadows. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You see, sometimes they do that. Actually, it's very difficult to, you know, you have to go long distance and see if the edge coming properly or not, way coming properly or not. You have to make a giant, say, parallel pipe or a trapezoid. How do you make that? You have to go from the airplane and see whether the pyramid is coming shaped properly or not. No, there is not a formula there. And that's how Shulma Sutra is. So it's not that people become spiritual, the material knowledge gets neglected. If you're for spiritual purpose, also material knowledge can be developed. So the point here I was making is that it was a very precise science. The timing was very important, the muhurta, to do certain things, and that's why geometry, astronomy, mathematics, all of them are very precisely developed. So that these religious ceremonies could be performed at the precise timings. So now here Krishna will talk about yatra kale, the time which is auspicious, the time which is inauspicious.
Agnir jyotir aha shuklaha shanmasa uttarayanam tatra prayata gacchanti brahma brahma vyojanaha.
Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world, being the influence of the fiery god, in the light, at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels from the north.
So, which is auspicious, Uttarayana and Dakshinayana? Uttarayana. Vishukama waited to Uttarayana, not because he was afraid, he was always remembering Krishna, but he wanted to demonstrate that. Will the devotee depart, in a material point of view, will depart in a glorious way. Okay, and the next one.
Sanjose, yogi prapti nivartate.
So, that means the timing is so crucial, and that's why yogis would try to do their pranayama, that they can prolong their lifespan. Because according to karma, number of breaths are fixed. If you slow down the breath, the lifespan can be increased. But still, it's very difficult. Now, even now, there are astrologers who can tell you when you die. Many are going to die. But most of the time they don't tell. Because, you know, they depend on pleasing their customers so that they will give you money. If you tell them when you are going to die, customers will be very annoyed, will not go to their own. So most of the time they don't tell. And generally speaking, this moment of death is very crucial. Right. Prabhupada explains that how they enjoy life by drinking so much, but then after that they have to come back. So, now Krishna summarizes this once again.
Yeah?
not. The word is Brahma, Brahma Vilojanaha. Those who know the Brahman, attain the Brahman, all these conditions are satisfied. So primary condition is to know Brahman. Without that, nothing happens. It's not possible that a person will live a materialistic life just because he happens to die of Uttarayan. That will not work like that. The consciousness surely has to be there. But along with the consciousness, the timing is also important. शुक्ल कृष्णे गति येते जगतश्चाश्वते मते एकया यात्यनावृत्तिम् अन्यया वर्तते पुनः दिस इज टॉकिंग अबाउट Passing in light means passing in Tarayan, or what other condition that is called. Passing in darkness is, and passing in this. So now when Arjuna hears this, has very anxiety. How do you plan that? You plan so many things, but how do you plan death? Then if the death comes, so unplanned. So Krishna says, Arjuna, when anxiety, then don't worry. That is the next verse. Yeah. No, this whole section is applying only for yogis. Yogis only. That means yogis, they have done the process in the sadhana. Even after that, if you don't have the right time, then things can go wrong. See, why what happens is that there are these three kinds. There's karma kand, jnana kand, and upasana kand. So in karma kand, it's all a focus of technique. Technique. If you do the technique right, you will get the result. So, in fact, in Mimamsa, as we know, in Karma Mimamsa, the devatas are not even considered important. The devatas are not considered important, just the yajna is considered important. The yajna is not, the devatas have to do the result. So the idea is that the technique is only important. If you master the technique, then you have the power. In Jnana Kand, one goes beyond these techniques, think about the ultimate purpose of life. But this, a yogasana process is also a technique basically. Although that aiming for a higher purpose, but it's a technique. And when it comes to technique, all the precision is required. See, you know, a person carrying a machine gun, or you know, a terrorist carrying a suicide bomber. And you know, he's carrying this bomb, it's on his body. And he has to reach a particular destination and then blow up the bomb. You know, if he blows up, by mistake he presses the button before, the bomb is not powered by engine out. If the bomb blows, there will be destruction. Because it's a technique. So, as compared to that, when we depend on a personal relationship, Krishna is bhavagrahi. So Krishna also gives us some techniques, chant my holy name, chant pronouncements clearly. But the technique is primarily to express our sincerity. It's not that technique is what is going to be the result. It is when our sincerity pleases Krishna that gives the result. So here, this is just a mechanical process. And because it's a mechanical process, the precision is very important. But somebody who is not developed his consciousness, then for him there is no benefit at all. He will go to whichever place he is destined to go, as per his karma. So because Arjuna has an anxiety, will I be able to die at the right moment? Immediately Krishna reassures him. नैते श्रुति पार्थ जानन् योगी मोहयति कश्चन तस्मात् सर्वेषु कार्येषु योगयुक्तो भव अर्जुन सो नाउ ऑल्दो देयर इज नो डिवोशन यूज इन दिस वर्ल्ड नो भक्ता भक्ति यूज इन दिस वर्ल्ड बट वी सी क्लियरली In this verse, so many times the word ananda chetaha, bhakti, bhaktya is used very clearly. So in this chapter, most of the places where Krishna is using the word yogi, that is referring to bhakti yogi. It is referring to bhakti yogi, and that's not just our interpretation. That is just objective analysis of the chapter also, it shows that. Krishna is saying yogi bhava arjuna, yoga yukto, sorry, yoga, yoga, yoga yukto bhava arjuna. Where is yogi bhava arjuna was in? Second last verse of the sixth chapter. What is that? Tasmat yogi bhava arjuna. Here is Yoga Yukto Bhava. They engage in yoga. And then, this was the reassurance, and you don't have to worry. I said, why do I don't have to worry? He said, just by being yogi, you will attain a destination greater than everybody else. That is the conclusion of this chapter. Vedeshu yajneshu tapasu chaiva kameshu yat punya palam pradishtam atyeti tattarvamidam pijitva yogi param sthanam upayeti shastram. So, in the Vedic Karma Kanda, Yajna Dana Tapa are considered very important. Yajna Dana Tapa Karma, Pavanani Manishina, Prakashanam is the Vedic chapter. Yajna Dana Tapa, they give very great results. So, Yajna is what we offer to the higher beings. Dana is what we offer to the people around us. And Tapa is what we do for our, what process that we do in our own body. All three basically involve sacrifice. One is, sacrifice of immediate body and assistance, that is tapaha. Sacrifice for the people around here, this is dana. And sacrifice for the higher powers, that is yajna. So, by yajna dana tapa, one gets a lot of punya. Pavanani manishina, Lord Krishna says. But, Krishna is saying here that whatever you would get by yajna dana tapa, and of course, yajna dana tapa is described in Veda. So, vedeshu yajneshu tapasu daneshu. Whatever punya phala you get, you will get all that and more also. Why more? Because by all that, what will you get? We will go to heavens. But heavens are temple. So you will get that and you will go beyond that also. Param sthanam, eternal abode. And Krishna already mentioned, eternal abode is his own abode. Now Prabhupada said, this is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters in the purport. Prabhupada gives a long purport here. He talks about Brahmacharya, Vanaprastha, he says, beauty of Krishna consciousness. Then, the beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that middle paragraph. By one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. The success in one stroke. And Prabhupada basically summarizes the Krishna consciousness in this report. So, we'll go over this, we'll do a review of this chapter and then stop. So, we started today by discussing about the Yoga Mishra Bhakti and discussed the different chakras. So, the subtle system has three actually, chakra, nadi and prana, is the other name. And then we gave Shuddha Bhakti, how Krishna says that if you practice Shuddha Bhakti, it is Sulabha. Syaham Sudhi is Sulabha, Sulabha Partha. And if there is any ambiguity that what is the Supreme Abode, who is the Supreme Person, Krishna is the Supreme Person, I am the Supreme Person, my abode is the Supreme Abode. And after glorifying, the ease with which one can remember Him by bhakti as compared to yoga, then Krishna tells further that as soon as remembrance of me will take us to the eternal spiritual world. He compares nature to the material and spiritual worlds. And again that question, he ends by describing this eternal abode you can attain by so, again here, so in this chapter 8.14 and 8.22, both are coming Kevala Bhakti. And then he talks about the Ashtanga Yoga Process once again and to talk about the dangers. So, earlier in 6th chapter, with respect to Ashtanga Yoga Process, Krishna has, Arjuna himself has talked about the difficulty. It's very difficult. Now here he is talking about how it is dangerous. Why it is dangerous? Because it is involving factors that are beyond our control. And there is precisely time and time lagging. It's quite difficult. Then he says, okay, don't worry Arjuna. What you should do is, just focus on becoming a devotee. And by that you will get everything and more. In this way, I was telling you earlier that Krishna is talking about this hierarchy. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So first he told him, Karma Yoga is as good as Jnana Yoga, but it is easier. So he moved and moved out of the way. And then here, after you practice Karma Yoga, you practice Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. And then the perfection is to think of me. Perfection is to think of me. And by thinking of me, you will return back to me. Then Krishna says that actually, this Ashtanga Yoga also is, Arjuna himself says this is difficult. Krishna says there is another way of thinking of me. That is why becoming my devotee. Then he talks about different ways by which you can become a devotee, and how becoming a devotee is superior to demigod worship or impersonalism. And now, the second thing that Krishna has done is, he has moved Ashtanga Yoga also out of the way. See, Ashtanga Yoga also, it is difficult and it is unreliable, it is dangerous. Therefore, Buddha. And now, after removing, now practically all the other Vedic rituals are removed by Krishna. You know, there is already demigod worship and impersonalism, Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. He has shown that they are subordinate. And Karma Yoga, of course, he has already shown that Karma Yoga has to rise higher to Ashtanga Yoga. So now, in the 9th chapter, the focus will be on bhakti. So it's called as Rajavidya, the king of knowledge. So that we will discuss tomorrow morning. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.